Well, good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore hosting today on Juno Afternoon. Have an interesting lineup of guests here. Katie Bowsler's on her way down from UAS to talk to us about the UAS Sound and Motion program. Jeremy Johnson from Juno Gamers will be here. We'll hear from a couple of folks that are going to be involved in an Alaska Housing Finance Commission lecture next week. Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, Scott Willis will drop by to tell us about the program out there on the construction of the Salmon Creek Dam, and I think we're going to hear a little bit about Little Red Book, which is opening at the Goldtown Theater. Weather today, mostly sunny, highs around 38, variable winds 10 miles per hour tonight, partly cloudy, patchy fog, lows around 21.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A video by Lakota students has been accepted to a youth film festival this weekend in Washington, D.C. As Jim Kent reports, the video is a rebuttal to a news report about reservation life.
More Than That was created as a class project in December 2011 in response to ABC's 2020 News Magazine episode, Children of the Plains. The program highlighted poverty, alcoholism, and violence on the Pine Ridge Reservation and other reservations in South Dakota. The student producers were first invited to Washington by the National Association of Federally Impacted Schools. The organization saw their video and wanted the students to speak about why the short film was made. After hearing a National Public Radio story about the students' visit to D.C., organizers of the Pendragon Youth Film Festival suggested the video be entered in their annual competition. Spokesperson John Michael Schenck says the festival staff were impressed by the Lakota students' ambition
and their willingness to actually counteract stereotypes in the media. And from our perspective, we continue to push the message to our young filmmakers that regardless of age, you can tell a great story and your film can also have an impact.
Schenck says the Lakota filmmakers are a prime example of that mentality. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Services will be held in Anchorage Saturday for Alaska Native leader Niall Caesar. The Tlingit man died last weekend at age 70. Jocelyn Estes has more.
For 19 years, he served as director of the Alaska region of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. His colleague there, Charles Bunch, says Caesar headed the region after the Indian Self-Determination and Educational Assistance Act opened the door for the transfer of responsibility for direct services from the agency to tribes.
Almost half of the recognized federal tribes in the United States are in Alaska, and Niles made great, great strides in helping them to contract out those government services.
Bunch says Caesar also advocated for the traditional life of Alaska Natives while serving on the Federal Subsistence Board. Caesar served on the boards of the Native corporations Sea Alaska and Gold Belt and was a council member on the Juneau, Tlingit, and Haida Community Council. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
The new Democratic Party of Canada, the official opposition party in Parliament, elects a new leader this weekend. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, a Native man initially vied for the job.
Romeo Saganash is a Cree leader and NDP member of Parliament for Northern Quebec. When the party's leader, Jack Layton, died last year, Saganash was among the first party members to announce his intention to run for the job. But Saganash's low-key campaign for the leadership failed to catch fire with the more than 100,000 delegates eligible to vote for a successor to Layton. Party officials had hoped that Saganash's candidacy would help the New Democrats make inroads into Aboriginal communities where there is a notoriously low voter turnout rate, mainly because of his compelling life story.
I spent 10 years in residential school, and you come out of there different from what you thought you would be. I was going to be a hunter. I wanted to be in the bush all my life, but I came out of there with something different, and I took it to where I am today.
Saganash cited several competing demands on his time for his decision to withdraw from the race. His energy had been divided by an illness in the family, which sources say caused him to miss a number of all candidates' debates. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
On this day in 1889, President Harrison signed a proclamation to open land for settlement in Indian Territory in Oklahoma. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after 3. You're in tune with KTOO News. Let's take a look at that weather again, just so we have an idea of what's coming up for the three-day weekend for most state employees, at least city employees as well, I think. So today it's going to be mostly sunny for the rest of the day. We got highs around 38 for the rest of the afternoon, and then variable winds will continue at about 10 miles per hour tonight. We're looking at partly cloudy, little fog patches around. Low ought to drop down like it did last night into the 20s. Light winds. Last night was certainly wonderfully clear. Lots of stars and a couple of planets out, so it was amazing looking up at the sky at about 11 o'clock last night. Saturday, looking at cloudy, chance of snow in the morning, chance of rain, snow in the afternoon, highs around 38, and guess what? Through the weekend, even though it's a three-day, you get chance of snow every day. So cloudy, chance of snow, lows around 31 for Saturday night, and the southeast winds will cold at about 10 miles per hour. And then Sunday, cloudy, slight chance of rain and snow, highs around 39, southeast winds. Sunday night through Seward's Day, mostly cloudy, low around 32, highs around 44, and probably a little rain and snow going on the whole weekend long. So, Katie, what do you think? Katie Bowsler is here with me from UAS, and she's going to tell us about the UAS Sound and Motion program that's been going on for the last several weeks.
That's right, Pat. Well, what we have going on is we're at the halfway point of our Arts at Egan Sound and Motion series, and we're really excited about tonight's panel. This is the kind of grand finale to the Landmarks Festival that Perseverance Theater has had going on all week. And listeners who listened in last Friday at this time heard a lot about it from Art Such from, of course, Perseverance Theater. And this included a play reading of a play that Ishmael Hope is working on, William Paul. There's also, I think, Floralina Legandino is working on something called Flipzoids, which is about a Filipino culture.
Right.
Last night, I saw a just stellar performance of Raisin in the Sun that was part of the festival.
At just a bargain rate, I might add.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. It was just right now, folks, if you want to see this, okay? This is probably one of the best productions ever.
Huh.
Just great acting, and it really brought up a lot of, unfortunately, issues that are very much still with us, even though, you know, this play was written in 1959. And then Perseverance will kind of pull this all together as far as these discussions of place and identity and diversity through theater cultures with a panel at UAS. It'll be 7 o'clock tonight at the Egan Lecture Hall. This is part of our Sound and Motion series. And on the panel are several people. There'll be theater artists Marcus Gardley, Ishmael Hope, Floralina Legandino, Donna Walker Kuhn, as well as Ed Bourgeois, who is the producer and director for development of the Native Theater at the Alaska Native Heritage Center up in Anchorage. He also is a co-owner of a production company that produces the popular Raven Radio Comedy Hour, which I'd like to hear that sometime.
Yeah, see if we could get it on down here.
Really, exactly. Yeah, really intriguing. Yeah. So Shona Strauser will be the moderator. I think there'll probably be time for question and answer from the audience, I imagine.
Art was very coy last week. He wouldn't tell us who the moderator was going to be. I don't think he knew.
Well, that happens, yeah. Anyway. So 7 o'clock at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. This is, of course, free.
Yes.
Which we want to point out, all of our Sound and Motion events are free to the public. A week from tonight, there will be a community poetry reading as part of the Sound and Motion series, and we're really excited. We have close to 20 submissions of members of the community and some UAS people who will be reciting their, or some spoken word, their original works of poetry up to around 5 minutes. We'll have kind of a tea party atmosphere as well, if you will. At intermission, we'll have tea and delicious desserts. And this should be a really, really nice event. Last year, it was just UAS poets. This year, it's open to the community, and we're really excited about that. And then if you do go to our website, uas.alaska.edu, you can read more about the rest of the series, which pretty much takes place in April. And what we have going on is April 13th. There's a very talented group that's started up this year, a student group of singers called Alaskapella. And this is all a cappella. They were a real hit over the holiday season. Some of you might have seen them perform around town. They'll be performing on Friday, April 13th. April 20th, a well-known spring event at UAS, but this year the first time part of Sound in Motion is the Tidal Echoes launch. So Tidal Echoes is celebrating their 10th anniversary. This is the Southeast Alaskan writers, poets, artists, photographers, a wonderful, beautiful journal that's put together every year. And this year, we're very honored to have our featured writer, Kim Hecox from Gustavus, will be there, as well as our Juno artist, photographer, Patrice Helmar. So that'll be the 20th of April, Tidal Echoes launch, again, a Friday, 7 o'clock. And then we'll close out the season April 27th with Nearly Normal Tales by Tom Cosgrove. He was a storyteller. And Tom's a pretty interesting guy. He's a dad who, you know, has done some traveling storytelling with his family. And he has some kind of funny stories to tell about life with the family on the road and in Juneau. So that's April 27th, 7 o'clock. So, again, all these events are free, 7 o'clock at the Egan Lecture Hall. They're not every Friday like Evening at Egan, but almost every Friday during the spring. And if you want more information, just go to uas.alaska.edu, click on the Sound in Motion link, and you'll see posters around town. We have our kind of pretty rainbow swirl poster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Katie, who comes up with the programming for these things? You do Evening at Egan, you do the Sound in Motion thing.
Right.
Who's the driver behind choosing the theme and then building the programs?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it's sort of a conglomeration of factors, if you will. Some of the ideas I come up with, other ones are brought to us by staff or faculty or the community, or the chancellor. And yeah, it just all kind of, we kind of get a list together, and there's a small committee that works on these events, the Evening at Egan in the fall and the Sound in Motion in the spring. And this year, you know, it just sort of, the theme sort of emerged.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had films in February. March, actually, we call it Mix It Up in March because there are a few different themes going on. And then we're calling it Voices in April.
Hmm.
Which also, I think, kind of goes along with National Poetry Month.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Well, with the poetry slams that are being held downtown, I think, probably monthly now.
Yes.
And we just finished in the high schools this Poetry Out Loud contest and are moving some students on toward that. So this is, maybe we need to start a poetry festival to match the music festival sometime in the middle
of
winter.
That's a great idea.
I
went to my first.
I don't know if we could do a whole week, but we could certainly do a couple of days.
I think we could.
Yeah.
I went to my first poetry slam last Friday, and I was blown away. There are some fantastic poets.
And then storytelling, too, with the Mudroom series going on.
Yeah, Mudroom, yeah. Same thing with the Mudroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of great storytellers and poets in this town, and, you know, they're just upholding and sustaining the oral tradition, which is pretty much what humankind thrives on.
Yeah, yeah.
Really.
But you have to be small. Community has mm-hmm. to be small, and it has to be, to some extent, I think it really helps that we're closed in the sense that you can only fly or take a boat in here. So we're kind of stuck with ourselves.
We have to entertain each other.
When you can either go to Hawaii or you can stay here and entertain your neighbors, you know. And we have the music festival, of course, coming up in a week.
Yeah,
which
I think it really makes for a wonderful combination of inspiration and support for each other as artists.
Yeah.
And I think it's really thriving right now. I found that with my volunteer radio show on Monday, I had, you know, a bunch of poets and singer-songwriters, four of them on the air. They were all under 25, and they were great.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they spoke to that. But,
well,
yeah.
We got a couple of seconds here. Let's stress the times again. So it's tonight at 7 o'clock in the
right.
Egan Lecture Hall.
Yes.
And then the next one is the, let's see, what did you say the second and the next one is? It's a week from now?
Yes, a week from now. So tonight is the Landmarks panel that'll wrap up the Perseverance Theater Landmarks week of kind of conversations about place and culture through theater. So tonight, 7 o'clock at the Egan Lecture Hall. And then next Friday, 30th, there will be a community poetry reading at 7 o'clock at the Egan Lecture Hall.
All right. Katie Bowser, University of Alaska Southeast, talking about the Sound and Motion Festival at the university ongoing through the month of March and April. Almost 20 minutes after 3, you're in tune with KTOO News. A little music there by Vela Fleck and the Flecktones from an album called Outbound. Has a great cover picture of them on some kind of train going to outer space. An amazing color photograph there. Anyway, my next guests are actually coming to me from Anchorage, I believe. And with me very shortly here will be Carrie Bowling and John Anderson, both of them with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and they're going to talk to us about a lecture that's coming up on March 27th in Centennial Hall. How's the weather like up in Anchorage today?
It's a little overcast, and actually the main presenter, this is John Anderson, but the main one is going to be Dina Strait. But it's a little overcast, about 25, 28 degrees.
Oh, what a shame. We have bright sun down here in about 35, so you'll be coming into to some a little improvement in your overcast there.
Sounds great.
Hi, Dina. So you're going to be, are you part of the presentation itself?
I'm not. I'm an energy specialist here with Alaska Housing, and I've been one of the main coordinators for getting the presentations available.
And the fellow who is actually going to do the thing is a member of the Windmill Development Group out of Canada.
Correct. Jonathan Westein, he's from Canada. He's a world speaker that does a lot of presentations on the green building movement. And he primarily focuses on the financial benefits of doing those kind of upgrades and retrofits.
The title of the talk is Can We Afford to Do Nothing? It's an intriguing title. What would doing nothing be?
Well, basically doing nothing would be to continue burning extra money for no reason at all. There's a significant amount of money that can be saved by doing energy upgrades to existing buildings, and we're encouraging people to take that leap, get an investment grade audit, and do projects to make their buildings more energy efficient.
Without going into too much detail, because we only have about 10 minutes here to be able to talk about it, how does one go about doing that in Alaska?
In Alaska? Well, there's a couple of different ways. There's currently about 150 to 200 investment grade audits that are completed on the street across the state, and those have been done through HSC with some funding that was provided by the legislature. And those audits that are already completed are in the hands of publicly owned facilities, primarily schools, the University of, any buildings owned by the University of Alaska, some DOT facilities, any state-owned buildings or municipality-owned buildings. And we're going to be complete with those investment-grade audits by the end of the summer. And so those investment-grade audits are already existing or in the process of being completed. If you were not lucky enough to get one of those free IGAs, another way is to just hire a certified energy auditor. They're typically employed by mechanical or civil engineering design firms, and they can help you do an investment-grade audit on your building.
So this is a program which is, the program we're talking about now is only really available to people who are trying to upgrade very large or fairly large buildings or business-owned buildings?
Well, it's not necessarily by the size of the building, it's by the ownership.
Uh-huh.
The loan program that HSC runs is for publicly owned facilities, so school facilities, University of Alaska facilities, state or municipal buildings. There is a small commercial audit revolving loan fund available through Alaska Energy Authority for privately owned businesses. So there's actually one for publicly owned facilities and privately owned facilities.
So in the will there be any conversation at this meeting about the privately owned facility thing, or are you primarily addressing the publicly owned buildings?
We're primarily addressing the publicly owned facilities. If a private individual wants to get more information, they can go to the Alaska Energy Authority's website. But the concepts and the process of getting the investment grade audit are really the same. The financial arguments behind going ahead and getting the investment grade audit and actually doing the upgrades or doing the retrofit is the same no matter who owns the building. It makes sense to do the work despite ownership.
Not to give away Westein's talk, do we have any sense of what the savings would be if this program were widely subscribed to?
Well, part of what we're gathering right now by doing the investment grade audits is information on all the buildings, and everything right now is projected savings. So we have a database. It's called the Alaska Retrofit Information System. And all the files on the buildings and their projected savings are put into that database, and then we can pull out that information to get those kind of numbers. As entities go through and actually do the construction projects and realize actual savings, then we'll be able to say, on average, you know, maybe they save 30% or whatever it might be. I know with the home rebate program, we've had an average of about 30% savings between, you know, as-is ratings versus post-ratings. So we're hoping to get at least similar results with the commercial buildings.
So, and if I can add, this is John Anders, if I could add really quick, we are in the process of upgrading our own building here in Anchorage. Pretty extensive energy retrofit just on our heating system alone, where we had some federal monies, and we're anticipating just a 40% reduction in our heating costs with the start of our process. The new units are in, and we're going to plan on starting to track our savings here over the next coming years.
There are some kind of cutting-edge ways to heat buildings, some of which have already been installed here in Juneau. We're starting to see the big renovation at the airport that used geothermal energy, basically, to heat and cool the airport.
Right.
And I'm wondering how much of that kind of program is part of what's going to be discussed on the 27th.
This is John again, but that they a lot of that will be allowable as far as the upgrades, the technology that's driving this, and the benefit to the varying technologies is a big part of this process. So there will be that will be one of the topics that we discuss with the various avenues to achieve certain things. But it really is regionally and depends on where you're at in the state of what the biggest benefit for that technology is going to bring to a project.
Now, Jonathan Westein, the man who's going to be conducting the lecture on the 27th, is a member of a group called the Windmill Development Group, which is a Canadian green building developer. He's also won a number of awards for buildings that his group has constructed.
Correct.
Can you tell us a little more about Jonathan?
A little bit more about Jonathan. I guess I think the most impressive thing about Jonathan that I found was they actually have a contract with, he's the chair of a group called the Center for Environmental Cooperation's Green Building Advisory. And this is it's a NAFTA initiative that works to do an integrated green building strategy between Canada, United States, and Mexico. So he's consulting with the governments of all three of those countries, trying to coordinate, to have a coordinated green building initiative. So when you're working with major countries in the world, I think that's pretty impressive.
I noticed he took his MBA from Dublin University. It's I guess that has something to do with his devotion to green energy, right?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Anyway, maybe he'll speak to us with a delightful Irish accent, and we'll all be entertained by that. So the lecture is March 27th. It's at 6 p.m., and it's here in our Centennial Hall in Juneau. And then he's also going on to Fairbanks and Anchorage. He'll be in Fairbanks on the 28th and in Anchorage on the 29th. Lectures at Carlson Center in Fairbanks and at the Lusac Library in Anchorage. I'm assuming the same program at all three places.
Yes, it's basically the same program.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Dina and John, for filling us in on this. Oh, is there a charge for the lecture program?
No, everything is free of charge. Everyone is welcome. There's a lot of really good information, transferable information between whatever kind of building you own, whether you own a privately owned building, a large duplex, or if you're in charge of running a publicly owned building. The financial lessons and the economic sense of it is transferable between all the building types.
Well, wonderful. Thank you very much for telling us about this program, and I hope your weather up in Anchorage improves, but look forward to coming down and enjoying some of ours as well.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye now.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 23rd of March, 2012. It was on this day, 1775, a lawyer named Patrick Henry spoke at the Second Virginia Convention in Richmond. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson were both there. The debate was over whether or not to raise a militia and arm Virginia to fight against the British. And Patrick Henry delivered the line, "Give me liberty or give me death." At least some people thought he did. But it wasn't until 1816 that it was written down by his biographer, who talked to people who'd been there. It's the birthday of Kim Stanley Robinson, born in Waukegan, Illinois, 1952, science fiction writer, author of the Orange County Trilogy, author of stories set on Pluto and Mercury, stories in the past and the future, on the slopes of the Himalayas, on the ice of Antarctica. It's the birthday of the French author Roger Martin de Gaulle, born in Neuilly-sur-Seine, France, in 1881, who chronicled the fictional Thibault family in a series of novels, Les Thibault, considered a roman fleuve, a French term that means river novel, a series of novels written by one author about the same few characters, a saga where the historical backdrop plays a prominent role in the fiction. It's the birthday of Louis Adamek, born in what is now Slovenia, 1899, emigrated to this country at the age of 14, author of many books about immigrant life in America, the labor movement, travel. Louis Adamek, who said, "My grandfather always said that living is like licking honey off a thorn." And it's the birthday of Fanny Marrett Farmer, born Boston, 1857, known for publishing the first cookbook in American history that came with simple, precise cooking instructions, also offered advice on how to set a table and scald milk and remove stains and clean a copper boiler. Here's a poem for today by Carl Dennis, entitled To Happiness. If you're not approaching, I hope at least you're off to comfort someone who needs you more, not lost or wandering aimlessly or drawn to the shelter of well-lit rooms where people assume you've arrived already. If you're coming this way, send me the details, the name of the ship, the port it leaves from, so I can be down on the dock to help you unload your valises, your trunks and boxes, and stow them in the big van I'll have rented. I'd like this to be no weekend stay where a single change of clothes is sufficient. Bring clothes for all seasons, enough to fill a closet, and instead of a single book for the bedside table, bring boxes of all your favorites. I'll be eager to clear half my shelves to make room, eager to read any titles you recommend. If we've many in common, feel free to suggest. They prove my disposition isn't to blame for your long absence, just some problems of attitude, a few bad habits you'll help me set to one side. We can start at dinner, which you're welcome to cook for us while I sweep and straighten and set the table. Then light the candles you've brought from afar for the occasion. Light them and fill the room I supposed I knew with a glow that shows me I was mistaken. Then help me decide if I'm still the person I was or someone else, someone who always believed in you and imagined no good reasons for your delay. To Happiness, a poem by Carl Dennis, from his collection Unknown Friends, published by Penguin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Betsy Allister, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Thank you, Garrison. We will keep in touch if we possibly can. It's about 25 minutes, almost 25 minutes before 4 o'clock. My next guest is here off work, as a matter of fact, dashed over to be with us to tell us about an event that's coming up. Jeremy Johnson is here from the Juno Gamers to tell us about the Pop-Up Geek Bazaar, which is coming up Sunday afternoon at the Jack. What is a Pop-Up Geek Bazaar?
Yeah, that's right, Pat. The pop-up means that we're only doing it once a month. So right now what we do is we just host the event, we put out all the gear that we have at the public market, and we open up tables for people to come and play. You know, if people just want to stop in and see what the stuff is that we have, that's perfectly fine, and we invite people to come for free popcorn.
Huh? a real plus. Are you charging for admission?
Just for the table fee. The event runs from noon to 6, and the table fee is $10, but it comes with a $5 voucher towards product.
Okay, you know, that's so no charge for kibitzing on the
right.
On the
just to come in and visit.
And of course, when you're talking about games, you're talking about checkers and chess and Monopoly, right?
Did
I get that wrong?
No. that's welcome. I mean, if board gamers want to come, that's entirely welcome. But mostly it's Pathfinder, a D20 system, Dungeons and Dragons, and then the collectible card games like Magic or I haven't seen any Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon players, but, you know, that sort of stuff.
You've done this a couple of times, right?
Yeah, we've
What's
had...
the turnout look like? How many people show up?
Let's see. I would say between 10 and 15 so far have been the regular turnout of the people that stayed. The people that come through, probably another 5 to 10 people. It's been really cold and lots of snow. So we're hoping that since the weather's been a little bit better and we're expecting rain this weekend, we might see a few more faces.
Well, we just got an update on the forecast, I was going to say. And the only change is really not going to affect you at all, because Sunday's forecast is still for cloudy with a chance of snow and rain. The high is probably about 39, east winds 10 miles per hour. So that means that maybe your snow driving them in off the street will continue to be in your favor.
All right.
Okay, so one more time. The event is the Pop-Up Geek Bazaar. It's Sunday noon to 6 at the Jack, and no charge for kibitzers, just a mild charge for coming in and playing the game, and that's $10 for table fee. But you get $5 back toward merchandise, right?
Yep, that's totally right.
Totally fair. Thank you very much for coming down, Jeremy.
My pleasure, Pat.
Every day I see how rape and sexual abuse change the lives of Alaskans.
Victims can be male or female, young or old, but their pain is the same.
If you're a victim of sexual assault, don't stay silent. There is help and there is hope.
Call your local shelter or your 24-hour crisis line. Asking for help changes everything.
Together, we can stop violence and abuse. Real Alaskans choose respect.
Visit andvsa.org or call 1-800-799-SAFE.
Minutes to 4, you're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Scott Willis has joined me here in the studio, and Scott is going to be delivering a program tonight at the Fireside Lecture out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitors Center. An interesting program it looks to be, Scott. You're talking about how they built the Salmon Creek Dam.
That's right, Pat.
How did you become an expert on the Salmon Creek Dam?
Well, I don't claim to be an expert, but I work for AELMP, and our department is responsible to operate and maintain the project.
Okay.
And it turns out that we have a lot of old photos at work about that, and I was going through them one day and thought, I need to know more about the history of this. So I started doing some research in the old records and looked at old photos, and it really is quite fascinating.
Of such things, Scott, historians are born, I warn you.
I'm worried about that.
Anyway, so who took these photos?
Most of the photos, and we have over 200, and there's probably 300 or more taken during construction of the dam, so it's very well documented photographically. Most of the photos are Winter and Pond photos, and folks in Juneau are familiar with that studio.
Lots of stuff on display in the State Capitol building.
And so we'll be looking at a number of the old photos and talking about what they depict and really how the dam was constructed.
So you've re-photographed these now, and you're going to be showing them on that big screen out at the visitor center?
I've scanned them into the computer, and we've got a PowerPoint presentation that has a bunch of these photos, and we'll show them on the screen and talk about what they're really showing.
They have quite a nice facility out there.
Yes.
It's got good seating, and there's a big screen on one side of the room and like that. And there's also an overflow out by the electric fireplace that is on a smaller screen if they get a
It set up for overflow. I don't know if very many people are going to want to come here and engineer ramble on about concrete for 45 minutes, but if there's more than can fit in the main theater, then there is an overflow section.
I remember a Science Friday program on NPR about concrete. It was absolutely fascinating. I mean, the things that are constructed out of concrete in the world are truly amazing. But I think you'll be probably less boring than that. Anyway,
I hope so.
Yeah. So with AEL&P now operating the dam, this legacy of photographs and like that, is it well constructed? Does the photographic history show us that it was properly done from
yes,
an engineer's standpoint?
It does show that it was properly done for its time. The dam was built nearly 100 years ago. It was finished in 1914, so it's 98 years old now. And it's looking a little rough on the outside, like a lot of us are, but it still holds water and still functions, and the project still produces power today, 98 years later.
Is there any indication that we need to do anything here?
We're always interested in watching closely and doing things to assess the condition of the dam. In fact, we're involved in some studies right now to sort of update our understanding of the condition of the dam. And from time to time, we may have to make repairs and things like that. But for now, it's looking like everything's just fine.
Oh, good. That's reassuring.
Yes.
I have to say. I don't know if this is a fair question to ask you off the bat, but what percentage of our power comes from this facility?
I looked it up before I came.
I'm glad you did.
I thought I might get that question. Salmon Creek provides about 8% of Juneau's annual energy demand.
Okay.
So it's not a huge part, but it's still an important part. We're glad we have it.
So is the entire remainder of that from Snettisham?
No, we've got a total of 5 hydro projects that deliver power to town.
I guess they don't get that much publicity. So
we don't.
A good engineer should be able to recite them.
Where
do we get all this power?
Most of our power does come from Snettisham, probably 70 or 75%.
Okay.
But we also have a project on Salmon Creek. We'll be talking about that tonight. There's a project called Annex Creek that was built just the year after Salmon Creek.
Uh-huh.
We have our new Lake Dorothy project, of course. And then the little Gold Creek project right down here behind Salvation Army by the federal building.
We can walk up there and look at it.
That's right. That's still running, and that produces a tiny amount of power. But, again, it's all clean, renewable hydro, and we're glad we have it.
Yeah. But we are able to get 100% of Juneau's power demand out of hydro.
That's right, on most days. If there's a problem at Snettisham or if we have to take the plant down for maintenance, then, of course, we start our diesel engines. But today, 100% of our power is from hydro. It's renewable and green, and it's a wonderful benefit.
One more advantage to living in beautiful Juneau.
Absolutely.
And on a sunny day like this, it certainly is along the lines of beautiful now, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Your shows are at 6:30, and then, as is always the case with the programs out there, you repeat again at 8 o'clock.
That's
correct.
So you'll
do this twice tonight, and everybody has a chance to see the thing in that fashion.
That's right.
So thank you very much for coming down and giving us the heads up here, and I'm sure some people will want to come out and listen to an engineer drone on about concrete.
We'll see. Thank you.
quarter till 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. This is Pat Moore. I'm hosting Juno Afternoon today, and my guest at the moment is Lyle Hebert. And Lyle has an opening coming up of a movie that is shot in Juno with a local cast. Tell us all about it.
Oh, I don't want to tell you all about it.
No.
Nobody will show up.
Right.
It's a film that we shot on high-definition digital, and it's got a lot of local people in here that do a very fine job in acting. It's a little comedy about two bakers working in a supermarket. It is set in Juno, however, don't come to it if you want to see a scenery movie about Juno. There are just a few cutaways of the town. Most of it's just in the story. It's something I started writing. Oh, geez, must have been 20 years ago or something like this, and picked it up and put it down and worked on other things. Anyway, it finally came when these new technology came, and I finally gelled, and it was affordable for me to do it. And we started shooting 2 years ago and have been shooting up until, I guess, maybe last fall, and the rest has been editing time just working on it and polishing it up. And so that's basically the story of the film, and I hope you come to it and enjoy it.
Well,
you don't get your money back if you don't.
It's not landscapes of Juno, but you did use interiors from places like the Zephyr Restaurant and other.
Oh, yeah.
Shot pieces of this inside Juno places.
Exactly, yeah. As I tell people, I'm an avid endorsement.
When you talked about the change in technology, the electronic technology, what is it that's made it possible for someone to produce a feature-length film as you have without being Hollywood?
Well, it's the money, basically. I have worked in 16mm and in 35mm, mostly 16mm as far as projects I've done myself. And I'll give you an example. For 90 minutes of raw 60mm footage, it would probably cost you about $4,000. That's before processing and work printing and then making prints from this, answer prints and release prints. For 90 minutes of high-definition digital, you can pay $34 and get that on a flash card that you stick in your camera. That's as compared to having a changing bag and using like an 11-minute roll of 60 millimeter film and, taking about maybe 5 to 10 minutes to load a film magazine. And as you folks probably know, you probably have digital cameras. You just put a little flash card in there and you're ready to roll. And now you could do that and make a Blu-ray copy of the finished product, which looks excellent, frankly, and you're making movies.
So how about the post the production process after the shooting? We've talked about how to get it to the card, but then the editing has changed dramatically as well.
Oh yeah, sure has. I've got an iMac and with a big brick off to the side to store footage on. And basically, you just download from the card into the computer, and I use this program called Final Cut Express 4. It's a Mac program, and basically, organize the footage rather than taking a piece of film and taking a piece of tape and writing on the tape and sticking it on the film and hanging it on a hanger.
Mm-hmm.
You're just basically, typing in the little bit of a description maybe, and you just file it away digitally. And it's organized, and it's easy to find, and it's not like you have to take off a piece of film and recut it together. You just open that file, and like if you've got a scene that's running a little too short, you're making a cut, you can just slide the following scene down the timeline to the place you want it without doing any mechanical cutting at all. And mm-hmm. There you go.
And no sound syncing or anything like that, which was...
I had some problems with sync, but that was... I'm not exactly sure why that is. I was able to fix it. but most of the time you shouldn't be having problems with zinc.
Mm-hmm.
You can slide tracks back and forth. And
for someone who doesn't know, that's when the lips don't match what the character is saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, yeah. It used to be we had to be 24 frames behind the action on the sound, and you did it on a big deck with three sets of reels with the sound on a 16 millimeter sprocketed audio tape.
Exactly.
It was an amazing process. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I used to have one of those. I ended up giving it away to
a museum, right?
a film archive in Anchorage.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Well, they still do a little bit of work with 16 in archives and places like that. So. Yeah. Now, we've talked about the shooting savings, and we've talked about the production savings, but now, what about the duplication process? I mean, if you're going to show this in more than one theater, then you have an additional expense that you have to deal with there.
Well, exactly. What I now have to do is, I've exported it onto a portable hard drive, and... So if I want to make more Blu-rays, which is the format I want to be using when I send it out to film festivals, I'll send the hard drive down to an outfit down south that does a lot of this in the Blu-rays. There's a fellow here, Gabe Strong, who's helped me constantly, but he can't do a lot of Blu-rays at once. You know, it takes some time to do them, and so I'm going to need quite a few of them, I think. So that's what I'll probably do.
And so you're planning on entering this in a number of film festivals?
Yeah.
What festivals will you enter?
Well, some of them I've already missed, you know. So I'm probably going to I'd like to try to get in Telluride, the Anchorage Film Festival, Seattle Film Festival, possibly Sundance. There's a whole bunch of them out there, but I'm not actually even sure which ones I'm going to enter them in.
So let's say that you managed to get it into Sundance and it won an award.
Yeah.
What would that mean from your standpoint? What would you do? Pay off your mortgage?
Yeah. I don't know.
You is
know,
there
that,
cash?
That's kind of, I call that magical thinking.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's say
so
magically.
I'm too old for magical thinking.
No,
so
no, no.
I'd be very shocked. I don't know what I'd do.
Uh-huh. You know? Does cash come with the award, or is it just
It depends on the festival. I'm not sure about Sundance. Telluride, it doesn't. In Telluride, mm-hmm. you're just really lucky to get into. They pick films that it's kind of an honor to be in Telluride. But I guess, you know, the main reason I like to get it in Telluride because I just like to go to Telluride.
Yeah. So you started writing this film 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Obviously, along the way, there must have been times when you said to yourself, I must be totally insane to continue thinking I'm going to make this into a movie. Contrast that, if you could, with now that it's going to show at the Gold Town this weekend. Were there times? Well, am I making that up?
No, you're not at all. I can tell you've tried stuff like this yourself. You know. And I
want to see my script?
Yeah. No, that's one of the nice things about living in Juneau. You know, the people making this film was so pleasant and fun. The town kind of holds together, and it seems like when you think of something or think of somebody you need to talk to, you walk around the corner and you bang right into them. There they are, you know, and everything I needed talent-wise and location-wise just came together here. And so I don't think it would happen like this in a lot of other places.
Katie Bowser was on the show this afternoon. She was my first guest. And we were talking about the light and sound and motion ongoing event out at the university. And she's doing, tonight she's having the last part of this sequence that's gone on through the week with Perseverance doing a series of readings and finally a low-price performance of Raisin in the Sun last night. Now all of these producers and directors are coming to a panel discussion tonight out at the university. And we were remarking, as we were talking about this next week, or they're doing a poetry festival up there, and we were remarking on the fact that this town is scary in the sense that there is so much art and so many opportunities of self-expression, and it's so easy.
Yeah.
I mean, she's got 20 poets already lined up for next week's poetry and they're all, I mean, this is judged entries. They're showing them to the English department up there and making sure it isn't just, you know, la-di-da. And then we've got the music festival coming up in 2 weeks, which is going to bring incredible music talent out of the weeds around here, and it'll all be up on stage.
It's like, you know, you think of towns having a lot of sports, and we've got that too, but I think that the art world in Juneau, it's a natural aspect of humanity, and it's well-nourished here.
Yeah.
And like some of the music I use was from local musicians. You know, if I had it to do over again, I would have used more of that, you know. But it's just a real fertile little town to create things in,
yeah.
to create, you know, good things in. So who knows? If it keeps on going this direction, there are some good filmmakers in this town. There's some really good musicians, you know.
Yeah.
It's really a nice place to live.
So, Lyle, Little Red Book is done.
Yeah.
Okay. So, do you rest on your laurels, or have you?
No.
The next script's already in production. Is that?
The next script is. It's not. It won't be a comedy. I've written it, and this is what I'll probably do. I've been going through that and basically trying to get it. You know, do some more work on it. But If that's the film I make, it will be also located here. It'd be in Juneau's history, it'd be more of a period piece. I'm not sure that's the one I'm going to do, but there's definitely another one.
A thing to look forward to. So
yeah.
Maybe in another couple of years, we'll see the second Lyle Hebert dramatic entry here. So it's showing. Again, first showing is
7 o'clock tomorrow night. That's Saturday, and then 9 o'clock. Then on Sunday it's 4 and 7, and on Monday it's 7, and on Tuesday it's 7.
Okay, so Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday,
yeah.
Different times at the Gold Town. They have a website you can go on if you need to the show times and like that. Said at the end of the News Minor article back in January that you might be running the projector. Is it true?
No, I hope not. I'll probably tomorrow night, I was talking to a friend, we'll probably go in there and just say hello to people, but I think I want to get out of there before the film ends.
Of course, is a piece called Little Red Book, and you're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore, I've been your host today for Juneau Afternoon. It's been an absolute delight on a sunny day to bring the program to you. Let's see, Monday on Juneau Afternoon, Jeff will be back, and he'll be talking about Wednesday's Men's Health Forum. Ken Fix will drop in with a preview of Tuesday's Planetarium presentation. Scott Camber will be here to highlight Alaska's housing stock and talk about homelessness. Jenny Fremlin will join Jeff from Alaska Litho. She has news about an upcoming set of training seminars, and Brandon Demery and Art Roach will drop in to talk about the upcoming weekend performances of a play called I Am My Own Wife, an interesting title. So tune in for Jeff on Monday on Juneau afternoon. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas, and we also broadcast on a set of translators to get a better signal around the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, we're on 276 AF, K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, it's K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens to us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. And in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS at 89.9. We're also on GCI Cable. We're on channel 871, and our sister stations are on 872 and 873.